I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Let's get to our first guest on the program today, and it's a pleasure to be joined by host of the Dirt and Sprague Show on 1080 The Fan in Portland. Brandon Sprague joins us here on Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game. Brandon, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it, and we've been having some fun this week with this Behind Enemy Lines podcast going back and forth between Portland and the Bay.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. Just really jacked and excited for Game 3 tonight. I can't wait to see how Portland responds from a devastating loss like that. They've responded pretty well thus far in the postseason. We get to see tonight if they can do it yet again against the Warriors.
What are you expecting as far as just the atmosphere? I know we've talked about it a few times early in the show, just the fact that the Blazers haven't been in the conference finals since 2000, and they haven't played a home game since, what, Game 6 against the Nuggets. So they go and they fly to the Bay, haven't even been home, basically, until after Game 2 against the Warriors. So what are you expecting to see tonight as far as the atmosphere and how much that could potentially lift the Blazers maybe back into this series?
You know, I Damian Lillard said at practice yesterday how good it felt to just finally get back in his own bed. Because as you mentioned, they go to Denver, and then they went straight from Denver to the Bay. So just to get back in your own flow, in your house, your family, your friends, et cetera, I always think that matters to a certain extent with pro athletes. But, you know, the interesting part, too, with the Moda Center is, and I told you this on the last podcast, I think it's going to be the loudest we've maybe ever heard it. There is something that really resonates well with this team. And I'm not one to buy into really corny, cliche things, right? Like people want to talk about, well, the culture's got to be great. I think you can win with great talent. The culture's maybe not as important. But I think you look at Portland, and this team has clicked with that stuff. It really does stick with Portland Trailblazer fan out here. And I think the Moda Center is going to be what Oracle was in 2016, 2015. Hell, even in moments now, they're still really loud. And I think Portland still has a lot of that because you don't have quite the corporate-ish feel when you win. I think you guys know this. When you start winning, it becomes a little more corporate. Everything goes up in price. Some of the real fans kind of get priced out. The Moda Center still kind of has that vibe going. And obviously we want to get to a point where championships are getting won here in Portland the way they are in Golden State. But I think tonight is going to be an absolute circus. I think the crowd is going to be drunk. I think everybody's going to be ready to go and have a good time.
Two things. First, and I know there's no way to measure this, but do you think there'd be any difference between the Portland crowd tonight if the series were 1-1 as opposed to tonight, whether the series being 0-2? Does that matter at all, or it's going to be a zoo either way?
You know, that's a really good question, because I was thinking about that this morning when I woke up, and I was talking with a buddy, and he was like, he was just devastated still. And I'm like, if only they would have won, come back 1-1. I don't know how it would be possible, but I do believe it might have been even more insane if it was 1-1. Now, with that being said, I still expect it to be the loudest I've ever heard it in my life, covering the team and as a fan, because I think the city knows what they're up against. They played maybe their best game. Golden State didn't shoot so well from three, and Golden State still came back from 17 down and won. I think the city is smart enough to know this is your season. I mean, this is it. You can't lose this game. And I personally actually think the series is over because you can't beat this team 4 out of 5 times barring an injury. But I know the city doesn't feel that way. So if they can win tonight, I think the crowd's going to go into that with just make it 2-1 and then see where you go from there. So to answer your question, I do think it'd be slightly crazier had it been 1-1, but I still think the crowd is going to be ready to go knowing this is basically their entire season.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Hour number 3 begins now, Warriors This Week. John Dickinson, Matt Steinmetz, and we're joined by Brandon Sprague of 1080 The Fan in Portland.
Hey, Brandon, is Damian Lillard healthy?
this is an interesting one for us, too. I think he is healthy. I mean, as healthy as you can expect a superstar player to be at this point in the season. We've come up with a lot of different reasoning here. Is he injured? Is he have any energy? Is he exhausted? I think all of this kind of comes into a play to a certain extent, but I'm not one that likes to, if a guy is saying that he's ready to go and he laces him up and he goes out there, I'm not going to be somebody from a fan or media perspective to go, well, he's not playing healthy. Look, he said he's fine. He's put him on. He's ready to go. We've done this a couple different times now where he'll go game five Denver, he'll score like 10 points, the team will get blown out by 30, and then the narrative is, well, he's exhausted. This season's been long, he's exhausted. Then game six comes and he drops 32, and my question is, so is he still exhausted, or what are we doing here? I don't think he's injured. He might be sore. He might be tired. That might be, might have some validity to it. But I'm not ready to go to the point where that's why he's maybe not playing as well. I give Golden State a lot of credit for that. And the real guys haven't stepped up. Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu have been, especially Al-Farouq Aminu, been god-awful. Myers-Leonard is very inconsistent. Zach Collins doesn't know how to play and not foul somebody. Evan Turner is very hit and miss with him. And Seth Curry, I don't know if we'll see that Seth Curry again. So it quite frankly boils down to their role players. And when you don't have a Draymond and a Clay, I think you see what happens. Dame gets doubled. Guys aren't hitting shots. The offense looks terrible. Golden State runs away with it. I don't think he's injured. He might be a little tired, but that's not an excuse for me for not playing very well.
Brandon, I asked you this for the podcast, and we'll bring it on the air here. What translates from the things that the Blazers feel they did well in Game 2 to Game 3 tonight, and what maybe gets left in Game 2, and it's a completely different night? How does Terry Stotts kind of manage it as far as who's going to play, who's not, what he liked, what he didn't? I know you've told me a couple of times he's not a big lineup-changing kind of a guy, but how do you think he'll manage it tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to put on Terry Stotts' tombstone, player, coach, family man, guy who never changes his lineup. I think that is ultimately how you're going to remember Terry Stotts, because that's what we talk about all the time is, hey, Al-Farouq Aminu's not playing well. Why are you starting him? He just believes, the creature of habit guy. He believes everybody knows their role, and he doesn't like to change that much. But in terms of what they can take away from Game 2, you know, I would say the defensive approach that they had early on, but part of this is Golden State just missing shots, but they rotated better. They were communicating. I thought they understood what they needed to do and where they needed to go in certain sets. And then offensively, I mean, they had a lead for, what, most of the first half, and Damian Lillard basically didn't score. So I think they just take what they did offensively. They still expect doubles to be thrown at Dame. You get kind of two-person looks going on CJ, and they just need to move the ball. And I told you this, John, and I really believe this. Golden State doesn't get enough credit for what they do defensively. But I think the thing they do the best offensively that Portland really needs to watch and mimic is they're moving the ball. I mean, Steph gets doubled against so many different teams, and he still ends up getting wide open looks. And the reason for that is because you're rotating and you're always moving. Watch Dame, and I've said this too many times to count now. When Dame passes the ball, there's oftentimes moments where he passes and he just slightly drifts. He doesn't move. They don't run back cuts for him on the baseline. They don't try to find open shots for him. So I think it makes it really difficult for them. So ultimately, you can take some positives away, but they need to get better. I mean, I thought in stretches in that game, too, where they could have made a couple buckets, there was a film out there, and you guys can see a photo of it all over Twitter. Evan Turner was actually really pissed off at CJ because CJ shot up a three late, and if you look at the still, Evan Turner is just sitting wide open under the bucket. And CJ's not always the most willing of passers, so they need to kind of be watching what's going on right now in Golden State, and they need to identify if they're going to have success, they need to move the ball and try to move it at the clip that Golden State does.
Was that the shot that theoretically could have been a dagger with 145 left that could have put them up five?
I don't remember if it was that one, because this is the one where he wasn't as wide open. He had one wide open one that he missed.
Yeah, the wide open one was a nice feed, actually, I thought, from Myers-Leonard. He hit the right guy, and McCollum was wide open. Gosh, I don't know if I want to talk about that or something you said that I thought was really interesting. The thing about Damian Lillard being double-teamed, I remember earlier in Steph Curry's career when he first started to get double-teamed, he held on to the ball just a little too long. He almost waited till he got double-teamed and realized like he couldn't make a play. Then he got rid of it. And a lot of times that's where he turned the ball over. But I think one of the things he's been incredible at and he's willing to do is as soon as he sees a double-team right now, he gives it up. Like he gives it up early because he knows he'll get it back. I did sense, and I wonder if it's Damian doesn't feel comfortable passing the ball to whoever he's got to pass it to because it's not going to be C.J. McCollum. I mean, like, Curry's passing it to Iguodala or Draymond Green, two playmakers. Does Portland have anybody like that where Damian Lillard can just give him the ball and be confident that the right play is going to be made?
You know, I don't know if this is going to make sense. I'm glad you brought this up. I don't know if it's going to make sense, but I hope it does. He trusts his teammates, but I think there's a lot to what you're saying. Like, I think he trusts them night to night to go out there and do what they do and feed him the ball. But I don't know if he has the same trust to the extent of what you're saying, right? So what I've always noticed that Steph's been doing in this great run they've had, Steph almost, like, jogs up the ball half the time, almost sprints, and then he passes off real quick. Like, sometimes even before he gets to half court, and they get into their sets and they start their offensive sets, Dame doesn't do that. It's like a slow, methodical dribble up, cut, and he doesn't do as great a job as Steph on that. And I've been harping on that this series is, dude, you need to understand, they're going to double you. Because if I'm Golden State, I want anybody else beating me. Hell, I would let C.J. McCollum go for 40. As long as Dame's held to like 15 or under because you're throwing doubles, you're going to win that game. So I think part of it is the teammate situation. But the one guy, and I told John this, that I think sticks out that they need to be trusting a little more is Evan Turner. If there's a guy that he trusts to give the ball to be kind of a playmaker on the level of Iggy or Draymond, it's Evan Turner. Yeah. Evan Turner knows he can't shoot the ball, but Evan Turner can dribble the rock, get into the paint, and you saw it early. He put a couple floaters up there, hit them. He puts pressure on the defense that way. And at some level, if Dame can give him the ball, move around a little bit, get a couple back picks, he can find his open spots the way that Steph does. He needs to do a much better job at that.
Brandon, how do you think the Blazers defend Curry? That was the big debate after game one. They laid back, all the wide open looks. They put more pressure on Curry in game two. But Curry, you know, still winds up having a very Curry-like game. How do you think the Blazers look to defend it? And which game were they happier with? Is it an obvious game two? They were happier with the way that all played out?
You know, I think they were happy, ultimately. What's the best way to defend Steph Curry? That's the million-dollar question that nobody in the league has figured out yet. I would say bring a priest, a rabbi, bring somebody to the arena and hope to God that it's your night. It's just there's no easy way to do it. They had so many good stretches there where you felt confident in their ability to do it. But look, in this business, we're wrong more often than we're right, right? But the one thing I would say is during that first half, I had some buddies that were texting me, and I was like, yeah, this is great. Are they going to sustain when Golden State goes on the big run? And people were like, no, it's not going to happen this game. They're playing good defense. And then sure enough, third quarter, 13-0 run. They're right back in it. They're tied going into the fourth. They end the game on a 14-3 run to win it. There's only so much this team is going to do. The talent discrepancy between the two, we knew what it was going in, and I think game two, if it showed us anything, it showed us that they still have that in them, whereas Portland threw everything at you, went up 17, and still couldn't hold the lead. And I think that's ultimately they're the most difficult thing about it. They're just going to have to give everything they have and hope that it's their night, that Steph's just not hitting from the field.
All right, Brandon, I'm going to put you on the spot here. We got about 30 seconds. Where are we going to be Monday night at 9 o'clock? Monday night at 9 o'clock Pacific, where is this series at?
Golden State 3-1.
That's pretty safe.
I want it to be 2-2. I'm hoping for 2-2. I think they win tonight, Portland does, and then I think Golden State is real close, and then they get game four in Portland, unfortunately. The more I watch this thing, guys, they played their best game, and they had a 17-point lead, and they still lost. I think the crowd can carry him tonight. I don't know if they can carry him for two straight against Golden State.
Brandon, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate the time, and I'll see you over at Moda Center later this afternoon.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Brandon Sprague. Appreciate him joining us here, Warriors, this week. Brandon Sprague of 1080 The Fan in Portland. And we'll be back with more of your phone calls here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson in Portland, Matt Steinmetz in our San Francisco studios, and you on the phone lines at 888-957-9570. We get you closer to tip-off between the Warriors and the Blazers, Western Finals. It's Game 3. It's going to be at Moda Center in Portland tonight. I will be there and joining Steiny and Guru for Warriors Live and Warriors Wrap-Up before and after the ball game. Tim Roy will be on the call with Jim Barnett, 6 o'clock tip-off here on 95.7 The Game. And Tim Roy is going to join us about an hour from now live from Portland. So we'll get his thoughts on this series and Game 3 and where things stand. And Steiny also coming up in 10 minutes. We're going to be joined by our pal Tim Bontemps of ESPN, who's on the Eastern Conference Finals beat and been covering the Raptors and the Bucks and the Celtics and the Sixers all season long. So we'll get his thoughts on the Bucks looking like the overwhelming favorite now to come out of the East with that 2-0 series advantage there.
Yeah, JD, the one thing where so far I've been wrong on this series is, you know, I thought when we first got the Durant injury news, at first there was hope he'd miss two games. That was kind of optimistic. And then it looked like, you know what, he's going to miss probably four. Well, it looks like he may miss the whole series. And the way I thought at the time was, you know, if Kevin Durant misses the whole series, to me the series becomes a toss-up. But it hasn't been a toss-up, really, because the Warriors have played better than the Warriors guards have played better than the Portland guards, and Draymond Green and Iguodala have played better than anybody in Portland's front court. So I guess what I'm saying is tonight's really going to show me whether or either how wrong I was or maybe that I wasn't as wrong as I think I was, because I just expected more out of the Portland Trailblazers playing against a team that doesn't have Kevin Durant. And I still haven't seen long enough stretches where they should be taking advantage of the Warriors.
Well, I think this series has played out a lot like a 2015 or a 2016 Warriors series would play out. And not to always bring it back to that, but I think a lot of the fans do that from time to time, where it's, all right, well, we got to roll the clock back. And it's got to be Curry and Draymond and pick and roll and Clay doing his thing and Iguodala stepping up. And you just kind of go from there. Easier said than done in theory, but I think that the Warriors, if you just look at the way they've played, not just the first two games of this series, but the last game plus quarter of the Rocket series, they have been able for now to flip the clock back to that era and have, I think, a similar level of success.
Yeah, let's go to Robin in San Francisco. Hey, Robin.
Hey, Steinmetz, how are you doing today?
Doing well.
How about you, John Dickinson? You okay?
I'm doing well, Robin. Thanks for asking.
I just wanted to say this. You know, everyone's, people calling in, talking about the ball movement, this, that. You know what? This might be a stretch, Simi, but I'm of the belief if Kevin Durant was playing in this series, he could single-handedly beat Portland himself, okay? And this would be a sweep, and it would be just fine with me. Because I'm in the camp of Al Davis. Just win, baby. And that's all I got to say.
Thanks, Robin. Hey, JD, Robin's a big Durant fan.
I'm getting that impression.
Yeah, she is. She says she's called in before and says, you know, we have a tendency sometimes to take him for granted. Let's go to Mike on 880.
Yeah.
What's up, Mike?
Hey, fellas, just want to say you guys are always killing it every week. Love the show.
Thank you.
But I got a few things on KD. I think that showing, like how JD was just saying, you know, they had to wind it back and, you know, start playing their style of basketball that made the Warriors, that have been the Warriors. And I just feel that KD, for the most part, kind of takes away from that. You know, I mean, obviously he puts up a lot of points, but I just feel like it's more stagnant. You know, I mean, Klay doesn't get as many it just doesn't seem like Klay is as in flow as he usually is and all the rest of the players. And I just want – and just not only that, but I feel that, like, KD is the best player on this team, but I feel that Steph is the best player for this team.
That's good.
And I just – because, I mean, KD, he's been beat multiple times. And, yeah, I feel like the flow of the ball now and everything. So I just – almost like how the last caller was saying, how do you think KD would do if Steph was out and going on with the series? Thanks.
Well, it's a good point. And I've been hearing from people that say, you know, why don't you guys start asking the question, can Durant win it without Curry, rather than can Curry get it done without Durant? And again, it's just the way – it's just kind of the way you look at it. I think the Warriors – if you look at this three-year stretch, JD, and you look at the personalities they've had on this team and the talent they have on this team, I think by and large it's been managed as well as it could be managed. And I could make a case that kind of what's going on with the ball movement when Durant's out and it's not moving quite as much when he's in, I'll make a case that this should be a bigger problem. It should have been a bigger problem over the three-year period than it is. Because the reason it wasn't a bigger problem is because, well, obviously Steph Curry has deferred some. I got to believe Steve Kerr, the way he handles things now by saying Durant's the best player in the NBA. I think there's something to all that, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I think there's a psychology to the whole thing right now, and it goes back to what I mentioned earlier in the show, and that's just the fact that everything that happened from the beginning of this season to November with Durant and Draymond, and Draymond gets suspended, and then they get over that, and then you had, you know, the stuff when the Knicks were at Oracle in January, and remember Durant was...
Oh, right.
Kind of moody about some of the things that came out there. And, you know, it's just been kind of it's one of those seasons where there's been just this back and forth of, you know, different emotions and different things going on. And you have Cousins coming back and you throw him in the mix and all of this stuff, right? But the point is, all of it will determine what happens July 1st. And we're not done. You know, something could happen tonight that could wind up being a difference maker one way or the other. Not saying Durant leaves, but maybe something happens where it clicks and he goes, you know what, this is why I want to be here. Or it's a box that he checks in that category if he goes back and forth, you know, between the two.
Yeah, I think that's well said, but I think he's decided. I really do.
Okay.
I think
yeah,
it's
decided. I know, and you've said that, and you've been consistent with that, and
yeah.
And
I'm wondering,
you might be right.
But here's the other thing. Let's say it is open, but he's like, you know, basically he's thinking about leaving. Well, what do you think could happen that could change his mind?
I don't know. Just looking at maybe the way that they play without him and thinking, gosh, how could I leave this? Like, this is special. How could I leave this? You know,
right.
And again, I get the flip side to that. The flip side to that is, well, you know what? This was fun, but these guys don't even need me, man.
Right.
Like I could even see him kind of laughing to himself saying that, you know, like, man, these guys are so good. They don't even need me, man. I'm not going to get my – and not even in a malicious or an angry way. It's just like, you know what? I'm going to go do something else.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll see if I can get a team that can maybe run it back and go at them. You know, that'll be fun. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just think everything's in play.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
All right, Tim Bontemps. We have Tim Bontemps?
Yeah, we got him.
Oh, we do have Tim Bontemps. Okay, Tim Bontemps of ESPN joining us here on 95.7 The Game. John Dickinson in Portland. Steiny is in our San Francisco studios. Tim, thanks a lot, as always, for coming on. Let's just jump right into the Eastern Conference Finals. What flipped this thing for the Bucks in Game 1? And, man, they just throttled Toronto from the beginning of Game 2 last night. And they're looking like a team that's not only, you know, making a strong push to get to the finals, but a team that could push maybe the Warriors in an NBA Finals.
Yeah, no question. I thought all season that the two teams that could beat Golden State in the series are the two teams playing in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you know, certainly last night especially, but really through the first two games, the Bucks have shown you why. First game, they didn't play very well. They still managed to win. And then last night, I don't even think they shot more than 30% from three last night. And they still controlled the game and won going away. So, you know, I don't think the series is over at all. Toronto, you know, has a lot of things it could do better, especially after game two. I didn't think the Raptors played particularly great in game one. But yeah, the Bucks look awfully good. And I think if it is a Bucks-Warriors final, they're going to give Golden State all they can handle for sure.
What if it's a Bucks-Warriors final and the Warriors do not have Kevin Durant for the entire series?
I think the Warriors are in trouble. I mean, this Bucks team is really, really good. And, you know, it seems like it should be a team you should be able to stop, right? It's Giannis Antetokounmpo and, you know, Chris Middleton's a nice player and then a bunch of role players, right? But the way they play and the system with which they play, you know, it allows these guys to be put in positions where they know what to do and they attack and they're comfortable and they make plays. And, you know, at every turn this year, people have been waiting for them to falter, right, and take a step back. And all they've done is go through every competition they have and just go up another level, you know, kind of effortlessly, right? They had the best record in the league. They had a statistical profile of an all-time great team. You know, they lose game one against the Celtics. People start to wonder if maybe the Mirage is coming. And then, you know, they rip off four straight wins. They play the Raptors, who a team I thought was going to win the series. They can win the series. And they, you know, get out of a game one they should have lost at home. And then they rout them in game two. So it's been really impressive to watch them kind of go through this season the way they have and just kind of at every point up their level when they have to and continue to make progress.
Yeah, the question, I guess, I have is experience. Will it ever expose itself for Milwaukee? And I'm talking about their lack of experience, because I think if they go into the finals, Warriors don't have Durant, Milwaukee's healthy. I think Milwaukee's the favorite at that point. But that's not taking into consideration Warriors championship pedigree and first finals for Milwaukee. But I'm getting the sense that might not matter, because Milwaukee's deeper now than they've ever been. And it's just one more step.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I mean, at some point you'd think it might raise its head, right, the experience factor, but they just keep throttling teams. And, you know, they certainly have more experience. They certainly don't have so much experience as the Raptors do, right? And they're throttling them. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like I said, I do not think this series is over yet. I think the Raptors could easily win these two games at home and bring it back for game five. Raptors would tell you they should have won game one. So I don't think this is over, but like I said, I think whoever comes out of this series, whether it's Toronto or it's Milwaukee, I think they can give Golden State a hell of a lot of trouble. And, you know, I think the evidence that both teams are stacked up over the course of the season should, you know, really at this point be indisputable that if once they get there, they're going to be able to play at a really high level and push the Warriors in a way that, frankly, I don't even think the Rockets could.
The one thing I've been thinking, Tim, and I haven't heard it, maybe it's out there, I was thinking, you know, if the Bucks get it done this year, why aren't we talking about them as a dynasty possibility? I mean, if they can keep that thing together, you would think that they're going to be around for a while.
Well, I mean, that's one of those things where you have to win one before you can start talking about that, right?
No doubt.
And there is still the specter of Giannis's free agency kind of hanging over the team. But look, if they win this year, right, you're right. You're looking at a team that's got, you know, Brooke Lopez is, I think, 30. You know, Chris Middleton's in his late 20s. Malcolm Brogdon's 26. Eric Bledsoe is 26, 27. You know, their bench is, you know, relatively young. You know, they're going to lose some of these guys that will be tougher to play. George Hill will be gone. Nika Mirotic could be gone. You know, but at the same time, they're deep and they're loaded. And most importantly, they got probably the best player in the world now, and he's 24 so or 25. So whether it's a dynasty or not, you know, you certainly would have to think that whatever team Giannis Antetokounmpo is on for the next decade, they're going to be in this conversation for winning the title, whether it's in Milwaukee or elsewhere.
Tim Bontemps of ESPN joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Tim, just give us your general impressions on the first two games of the Warriors-Blazers series as you watch that one from afar. Portland obviously missing an opportunity. How do you see that one kind of shaken out moving forward? Did Thursday night turn it into a short series when maybe it could have been a long one, or do you think Portland still has the chance to extend it by winning a couple up north?
I would think the most this is going to go is five games, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's four. I mean, I think that you're right, JD. That game, if they win that game the other night, it's probably a six-game series, right? You figure they probably win one game at home, and then it goes six. But at this point, you know, we'll see tonight. I mean, if the Warriors get this one tonight, it could be four. But they just haven't. The Blazers just have never matched up well with the Warriors, as you guys know. I mean, basically, they have Dame and CJ, who are a lesser version of Steph and Clay, right? And it's just hard to go up against these guys when you're kind of the same team with slightly lesser parts, and that's really what they are. And you've seen in these first couple of games, they just have never had that playmaking four, You know, to complement the Warriors and really make plays in those, when they trap Dame and CJ on those pick and rolls and stuff, right? I mean, they've tried Evan Turner, they've tried, Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu, and they've tried a bunch of different stuff. And, you know, maybe if Nurkic was healthy this year, I mean, Nurkic was so much better this year that maybe he would be able to do some of that stuff. He was healthy. Obviously, he's not. It just doesn't feel like they've got enough juice in the tank to make this really competitive, and especially after the first two rounds they had. I mean, they had to go through a couple slugfests to get here. And full credit to them. I mean, I didn't think they'd get out of the first round. So I'm super impressed with Portland. They've had a great year, but I just think they're kind of, you know, fighting with one hand behind their back in this one, and I just don't really see how they can make it too much more competitive than getting one of these two games at Portland.
Tim Bontemps of ESPN joining Matt Steinmetz and John Dickinson. I want to ask you about the lottery this week. Did anything happen in the draft lottery that will impact – free agency in the off season, or did anything become, let's say, more clear after the Pelicans get the number one pick?
No, I would say it made things more complicated and opaque. You know, the Pelicans winning the lottery certainly gives them a myriad amount of options now of what to do with Anthony Davis. I mean, I could definitely see, I could see David Griffin, you know, saying the hell with it, we're going to try to play this out and convince this guy that he should stay here. You know, David's an optimistic guy by nature. Guy's beaten cancer a couple times. Obviously, he was, you know, very loudly saying the Warriors, the Cavs are going to come back and beat the Warriors in 2016. You know, the other night he was saying, he told everybody before the lottery that he had seen a vision that they were going to win it, and then they did. It's just kind of how the guy is, right? He's just a very positive thinking guy. And so I could see him thinking he could convince Anthony to stick around. Also, it gives them the option to kind of go in a variety of directions with trading them, right? They could,
right.
They go to the Knicks and say, hey, we want to get RJ Barrett to play with Zion, and that'll be our young core going forward. Or they could, they could prioritize different things depending on what they're looking for to pair with Zion now. So, that part of it is interesting. The Lakers getting to four, obviously, you know, I don't think anybody thought they were going to be able to get a player this summer, but at least one of the top couple players, but you know, maybe with a top four pick there, maybe you could trade for a guy now. Maybe that helps you attract a third guy in free agency, right? Like that might help them a bit. And the Knicks, I thought the Knicks needed to get into the top three to still be in Davis hunt for sure. And I think they are. A lot of people consider this a three-player draft with Zion, Ja Morant, and RJ Barrett. So as long as they could get their hands on one of those picks, I think they'll be a factor. But, yeah, no, I definitely don't think this, like, cleared up anything as far as the summer goes. If anything, I think it made it even more wild and unpredictable as to how things are going to shake out in the months ahead.
Tim Bontemps of ESPN, thanks, buddy. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, fellas. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Tim Bontemps, good stuff as always here on Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game. Our Eastern Conference correspondent, but the great thing about Tim is he's always got he's piped in and opinionated on everything going on throughout the league.
Yeah, we didn't talk much about the lottery or at all about the lottery. Just any of your impressions? Pelicans getting number one, Grizzlies getting two.
Well, I just would share with the listeners just, yeah. I mean, because I think you and I had the conversation. Maybe, gosh, over the weekend, we were just talking about the lottery a little bit. And I think you were one of the people I said this to. I did say it to a couple of people when I got asked about it or just in general conversation. I said, well, you know, the one that would be classic would be if the Pelicans somehow won it with, Anthony Davis just wrecking their year.
Right.
And then they wind up with Zion, and then maybe he wants to stay, although it sounds like he doesn't want to stay, but it would just give them a lot of options moving forward and different things to do. The Lakers moving up was interesting. The Knicks not getting the number one pick, I think, will have a dramatic impact on things. I know they were hoping they could get Zion Williamson. I think you also have a couple of teams in the West now with the Pelicans and the Grizzlies that, you know, they've got some options. That the West is going to get even deeper, I think. You know, you've got two teams the Pelicans aren't that far removed from being a playoff team, right?
Right.
And obviously what happens with Anthony Davis is going to play a big role in that. And then you've got Memphis, who desperately needed, to be able to hit the reset button. So it's probably going to be easier for them to do that. I just look at it almost as, hey, the West and now the Lakers with the fourth pick. And there's a belief that obviously them with LeBron, they could be better, significantly quicker than a lot of teams. So I kind of looked at it under the context of, boy, the West and some of the weaker teams in the West are probably going to be better 2019, 2020. Look out.
All I know, JD, is the team I absolutely didn't want to win the lottery didn't win the lottery, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's the one team I did not want to see win the lottery.
And why was that?
Because they've just had enough luck, and they haven't done enough with it. Why should they number one? I mean, if the Knicks would have gotten number one, to me that would have been much better than the Cavaliers.
Okay. All right, I'm with you. You want to get Priest in Palo Alto here before we step aside? Let's get to Priest in Palo Alto on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks. Oh my God, that's all, guys. Hey, listen, I want to change Durant's name for just a second and let the fans of the Warriors understand what we have. Instead of Kevin Durant, his name is Michael Jordan. That's what you have. That's what I saw 2 months after he was here, before we won the second championship. His skill set is right there with Jordan's. She has something Jordan never had, 7 feet tall. The difference is mentality. Jordan's mentality, some would say, is much better. People hated playing with him. The difference is people love playing with Kevin Durant. So stop it with the nonsense.
You think they do?
Yes, we play different with Michael Jordan. Anybody would. Anybody with half a brain would. Okay, so that's just what I wanted to say. And also, if you have a wife, I'm going to just give you a scenario. If you got a beautiful wife, beautiful home, life is great. You're going to walk away from that and say, I need a challenge? Are you nuts?
Okay. His life might not be as beautiful to him as it is to us. That's all I'd have to say there. But Priest usually comes with legit. I get him. I get him. I do think when he started saying Durant and Michael Jordan, I'm like, well, hold on a second. But you start to say, well, what if Durant did have Jordan's whatever killer instinct or mentality? Yeah, I do think Kevin Durant would be even better. I don't think guys did not like to play with Jordan, though, and they like to play with Kevin Durant.
I'm not sure about that.
That's the one I'd maybe get into it a little more with them about.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Our thanks to Tim Bontemps. More of your phone calls coming up. Warriors this week with J.D. and Steiny on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Matt Steinmetz. I am in Portland. Steiny in our San Francisco studios. Warriors and Blazers, Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals coming up tonight right here on 95.7 The Game. 6 o'clock tip. Steiny, you and Guru will have Warriors live at 4:30 after we step aside at 1 o'clock. Michael Urban will be taking your phone calls from 1 until 4:30, so keep it locked here with Herbs throughout the afternoon. And then Steiny, you and Guru will be back at 4:30, and you're going to carry it all the way into that 10 o'clock hour tonight with this one tipping off here at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, JD, looking forward to it. Season on the line for the Portland Trailblazers. It really is. And, you know, one thing I was thinking, and I know it's a little out of the box, but Damian Lillard is so attached and linked to Oakland. I wonder if, in a way, there are more distractions for him when he comes here to play. And we had our guy Brandon on who said, you know, Damian was talking about how it was just great to get back in his own bed. Keep in mind, they were in Denver since Saturday night. And so they just got back to Portland after game two with the Warriors. So there may be something there. I actually gave that a little thought, too. He gets asked about Oakland, all the pregame and postgame stuff too. So
every game,
yeah, maybe that, you know, maybe I'm not saying that's, you know, he's going to have 50 tonight because he's in Portland, but I don't dismiss that as an intangible.
He has played better against the Warriors in Portland than he has in Oakland. There's no question about that. I know he hit the game winner in Oakland December 27th, and then the Warriors came up and beat him in Moda Center on the Saturday night there on December the 29th. But I like, you know, he's had the 51-point game against him. He's had a lot of big games against the Warriors in the regular season and in the playoffs, but they've been more so up in Portland as opposed to down in Oakland. Let's get to some calls. You want to do CeeLo? CeeLo in San Francisco is up here on 95.7 The Game on Warriors this week. Hey, CeeLo.
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Quick question. So the Warriors are favored by 2 tonight. If you had to put your money on a team, who are you putting on tonight? Me personally, I think that the Warriors are going to win in 5, and I think that the Blazers are going to win 1 game, and I think that 1 game is tonight. Let me know you guys' predictions. Thank you. Bye.
I hate making predictions.
I know
you know
do.
I do. You know I do.
When we had Brandon.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I
no, go ahead, man.
I'll double check that. For some reason, I thought the Warriors were actually underdogs tonight, which somebody said sounds fishy. But I don't know. I mean,
I could bring it up while you're talking.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is a tough. These are tough ones for me because we've seen the Warriors do it all.
Portland 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, so Portland's 2.5-point favorites. You know, that's, you ever notice when they give you the line, it never seems like it's easy? That's the point of the line, JD. Could I see the Warriors winning 115-106? Yeah. But, I could see Damian Lillard hitting a 3 at the buzzer to make it 113-110. I mean, I can't help CeeLo. I just can't. I don't want to steer him wrong. You know what I mean?
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Let's go to Nick. Nick in San Francisco. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys.
How you doing, man?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I just really want to hear an argument for why Steph Curry is the better player between him and Kevin Durant. We keep talking about Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, and it's like this foregone conclusion where Kevin Durant is automatically the better player. I don't want to take anything away from the guy. He's an incredible player. He's an all-timer. And I think in any era, he is, you know, one of the best. And in any other era, he's probably better than Steph. But in this era, which Steph has created, I think that people are not considering all of the things that he does to impact the game.
Talk about
all these like spatial analytics,
right?
And things. You know, I'm interested in hearing what you think about you know, Steph actually being the better player?
That's a great question, Nick, and we'll dive into that. JD, you know, it's funny. Some people say, well, Durant's the best player in the NBA. Oh, so he's better than Curry? Yeah. Okay, why? Why is Durant better than Curry? I'm going to ask you that question that Nick posed.
Yeah, I haven't given a lot of thought, to be honest, in depth. The one thing that I always say is it's just assumed that Durant is the better player nationally. Now, locally, I've pointed out, the Bay Area is really the only place in the country where there's even maybe a debate about it. So I think it's something that Durant's height is part of it. I really do. I think it's his skill set for a guy that's basically a 7-footer. I think it's the fact that he's on the level of, he's compared to LeBron James. He's compared to Michael Jordan. He's compared to, players of that ilk. Whereas I think it's hard maybe for a point guard to be put in that kind of a category. Like when do point guards, like where do point guards start to get in the conversation of greatest of all time? Like think about that, right?
No,
like
you're right.
Who's the only? I mean, is Magic Johnson is the only point guard that comes to mind when you start having a conversation, and maybe I'm missing somebody obvious, and you can correct
an Oscar Robertson was theoretically considered that, but even he was 6'5", so he kind of redefined the position back in the 60s too. Only other guy I would say is Isaiah Thomas, but I see him as a tier below in terms of kind of his legacy. And then the guy is Steph Curry. I mean, he would be the other point guard to consider, I would think. I don't know exactly where he fits.
Well, what do you think? What do you think?
I think that Nick asks a really, really great question, to tell you the truth. I was asked, Guru asked me maybe 20 games into this season, I can start it, or I can have any player. It wasn't one of those start a team tomorrow because I'd take Giannis, but any player to win a game tomorrow, I think I am taking Curry over Durant, and I'm not sure. I know, it's almost like a taste thing. They're different players. They're clearly different players, which makes them hard to compare. But I'm not one of these people that have said, "Well, Kevin Durant." Like people say, "Oh, Durant's better than Larry Bird was." Oh, really? I don't think so. I don't think so. Durant's better than LeBron James. Well, he might be overtaking him, but the body of work still belongs to LeBron James. So as I think Kevin Durant's maybe one of the greatest scorers of all time. I don't think he's one of the, he's not as high up on the greatest player list. And I think Curry, I think you could make a case Curry's a better player, but maybe it's harder to make outside the Bay Area.
Well, it's interesting, too, because if anytime you get into that conversation, you start looking at MVPs and championships, right? Well,
yeah.
Durant's got one MVP in the regular season, and he's got two finals MVPs.
Right.
Durant's won the last two championships. Curry's got three championships, one without Durant. And so he's got more championships. He won, obviously, the decider is 2015 when he won without Durant there. And then he's got more MVPs. As well. So, you factor that in and you maybe wonder why it's not a little bit closer of a conversation. But to me, it's height and skill set and the ability to get your own. I think that's what it's just Durant, the ability for Durant to just get the ball and get his own, just dominate you one-on-one. I think that's where best player comes in, as opposed to Curry, who gets his own, but he gets other people involved, and he's shooting threes. And I think there's this belief that Durant can do.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.